Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
A big weekend for the Ohio State Buckeyes. Have you heard about this? Have you seen about this? Number 4, Ohio State on the road in Happy Valley against number 3, Penn State. One of these teams is undefeated, and it ain't Ohio State. James Franklin is still James Franklin. Just so we're clear, I actually really like Drew Aller, which I've pointed out. We might be watching the Browns' future quarterback this weekend. We did last weekend as well, but he got hurt there. But yeah, James Franklin is still James Franklin, but there's a conversation to be had here about this game, and to have it with us of Kings of the North on YouTube, Monday through Thursdays at noon, the post game. Also on Saturday nights, the great Doug LeMaurice joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hey, Doug, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I'm only asking you this because I never know what you're going to say, because you actually, you're one of the media members that answers things truthfully, and I appreciate it. Are you a Halloween guy?
Oh, I'm a candy guy. I'm not a scary movie guy. I'm a trick-or-treat with the family guy. So I'm like, a trick-or-treat, yes. Like scary stuff, no.
Okay, no, I think that's a perfect line to walk. I now consider you a Halloween guy. I hope that's okay with you.
Oh, I'll take it. I love mini Snickers.
I would say I love mini anything, like any candy, yeah. Really. I mean, I just buy the handful if I can. I'll ask you, when we're talking about this Ohio State game this weekend, how do you feel about this matchup?
Oh, I think it's great for the Big Ten. I do think this might be the most complete team, both sides of the ball, that James Franklin has had in his 11 years at Penn State. I think it's a huge game for Ohio State, less because of the loss to Oregon, but more because of the way they played last week. I don't think anybody thought it was impressive. But I think it's great. I think both these teams can absolutely compete at the top of the sport this year. So I think this is one that the Big Ten and Northern College football fans should be psyched for.
What do you think is the key matchup for an Ohio State win?
Jeremiah Smith versus everybody. The last 2 years, Marvin Harrison Jr. won this game for Ohio State. I think in both years he had the most targets he had in any game in the Penn State game. A couple years ago, it was a big Marvin Harrison Jr. Joey Porter Jr. matchup, with Porter at corner for Penn State, and Marv kind of undressed him. And Joey Porter Jr. was still the first pick in the second round of the Steelers. Like, he's a great player. But Ohio State in those two wins the last 2 years, like, found a way to let their best offensive weapon dominate the game. And that's the process I think they need to have in mind with Jeremiah Smith. They did feed him a lot in the Oregon game, but I would, if I were Ohio State, I would want to target Jeremiah Smith at least 12 to 14 times in this game, maybe more. And it's not that Penn State doesn't have a good secondary. They do. They always do. They have a couple transfer corners from the SEC. They're good. But go to your best guy. And they've proven they will do that in this game, and I think the Buckeyes need to do it again.
So for the other side of the ball, what is the key matchup for Penn State to win this?
Yeah, it's probably Abdul Carter, who is playing some linebacker for them, but still a lot of defensive end. I would imagine they'll try to put him over the Ohio State left tackle spot, which is completely up in the air after the season-ending injury to Josh Simmons. And Mahalski played there last week, wasn't very good. He's hurt. It probably won't be him, so it'll be somebody new at left tackle for Ohio State, maybe left guard Donovan Jackson kicking out. But Abdul Carter is, he's not Micah Parsons, but he's a really good edge player. And Ohio State had huge problems at left tackle last week, and that was with what they thought was the next best option after the Josh Simmons injury. And so now what's that going to be like? So if they can have a dynamic dude potentially dominate that matchup, then all of a sudden is Will Howard going to have time to get the ball to Jeremiah Smith and everybody else? So obviously every fan needs to be watching the first couple series, how that Ohio State left tackle, stands up, and whether Abdul Carter is taken into the cleaners.
Doug LaMaurice, Kings of the North on YouTube on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, number 4 Ohio State, number 3 Penn State, in the state of Pennsylvania coming up this weekend. How did you view the Nebraska game? Were you more distressed that they struggled to convincingly beat Nebraska, or do you think it only really matters that they won?
No, definitely distressed. I was not distressed by Oregon. I thought that was two good teams playing at a pretty high level. I thought that was a more of a high-level game than some of the SEC matchups we've seen this year. And, yeah, there were some things with the Ohio State defense that could have been better, but you know what? Those are really good skill players for Oregon. And then off a loss, off and off week, I thought that they would come out and assert their will and show again how good they can be, especially with Nebraska coming off a blowout loss to Indiana. And Indiana and Ohio State, by some metrics, are the two most efficient offenses in the country. And Indiana against Nebraska kind of did anything they wanted to. And Ohio State against Nebraska did not do that. They hit a couple big plays and otherwise couldn't run the ball. And that is an issue for them. So I just thought the spot, a chance to prove yourself, like Nebraska is good and competent, but, you know, Nebraska's not a top 25 team. And in comparison to what Indiana did, like I that's the one that really got my attention of like, okay, is Ohio State not quite what we thought they were?
Doug, the O-line drives me crazy. On one hand, if you're going to be a finesse offensive line, that's fine, but you got to move well. I don't think they move very well. They're certainly not a physical offensive line consistently. So I'm just curious because I don't know what stylistically they do well. Like, and then it comes to it, I don't know if they're bad at identifying O-line prospects or they're bad at coaching them up. Can you help me make sense of the O-line debacle that has become Ohio State under Justin Fry?
I do think it's more recruiting. I mean, you know, the Ohio State fans who follow it closely, there have been a lot of especially tackle misses in recruiting the last couple years. You know, they've been in a lot of five-star guys that in the end, they don't get them. Jordan Seaton was one of those guys who's the starting left tackle at Colorado this year as a true freshman. He was in it. I think it was like down to Maryland and Ohio State for him. He actually committed to Maryland, I think, and then flipped to Colorado. But if Jordan Seaton was here, he'd, you know, would maybe be starting for them. I think he maybe would have been the starting right tackle. Josh Fryer plays guard. Now Seaton could move to left tackle. They've just missed in recruiting. So they had just enough with getting Seth McLaughlin as a transfer at center. They had just enough to put out five guys this year that I thought the offensive line actually was played better in the first half of the season than I thought it would. The right guard spot where they've been playing two guys who are new has been the problem spot, but now they got one injury and they don't know what to do. You know, like Notre Dame has, I think, three starters on the offensive line right now who are playing because of injury, and Notre Dame's figured it out. Like, you have to – offensive line injuries are not unexpected. And for Ohio State to barely have five guys to trust, I think is more of a recruiting failure than anything else, and it's one I think we kind of saw coming.
Doug LaMaurice, Kings of the North, on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So I'm curious about this because everybody keeps talking about, you know, Jeremiah Smith's dominance on a freshman level instead of where I'm at, where it's just I'd like for any level of player, any year of player, the kid just does something every week that makes me go gaga. I'm curious, how do you classify, quantify, whatever word you want, Jeremiah Smith's performance here in his freshman year at Columbus?
So this is an ongoing conversation we've been having with our listeners and viewers. If you could have either fourth-year Marvin Harrison Jr., that he didn't go to the NFL, he stayed for a fourth year, like a lot of these Ohio State seniors did, right? But then Jeremiah Smith decommits, and it's just about this year, no future. Or you could have it as it is. Marvin Harrison Jr. leaves, and you get freshman Jeremiah Smith. So it's senior Marv versus freshman JJ this season in a situation where I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is probably the best receiver in Ohio State history. Who would you rather have right now? And I think the answer is Jeremiah Smith. So that's my context of – I think you'd rather have him as a freshman than the best receiver in Ohio State history as a senior. So I hope that answers the question. This is nuts.
I think it is, and I share in your incredulity. Through seven games, have you seen enough to discount Ohio State as a true national championship contender instead of being a playoff contender?
No, I think even coming off Oregon, they were my national title pick before the year, but I also picked them before the year and that week to lose to Oregon. I thought it was a very reasonable loss. You're allowed to lose now in the 12-team playoff. And still after the Oregon game, I would have said Ohio State's still my national title pick. Now, after the Nebraska game, I would not say that, but I don't have a different national title pick. I now just think they're in the pack. But when you look at Georgia, when you look at Texas, when you look at the best team in the Big 12, or Miami's undefeated in the ACC, or Oregon, or Penn State, or anybody else, I don't think they're better than Ohio State. But if previously I thought Ohio State was above them, I no longer think that. So now I think if you wanted to throw out seven or eight teams and say they all kind of are in the same mix for the national title, I wouldn't take Ohio State out of that, but I think they're firmly in that instead of above it.
Doug, you and I fought on the same side of the Sashi Brown Wars once upon a time when you worked for the Plain Dealer. Mm. And so now I must ask you, where do you stand on the Ryan Day Wars?
So I certainly coming into the season thought what kind of world is it where it's like if they don't win the national title, you're out on Ryan Day, right? Like, is that real? Only one team wins it all. Like, that's really where we are. Does Ohio State have to beat Michigan this year? I mean, at some point, you can't lose like 9 in a row to your rival. So at some point, yes, you have to win that game. So I was very much in on, like, there's plenty of room for criticism and critique, but like the get rid of the guy discussion was just crazy to me. I have not changed my mind on that, but I was very disappointed by the way Ohio State played last week. So I am still not there. It like a irrational win all your games or else is not healthy for anybody. But they have a lot of talent, and I don't think they're playing as well as anybody thought they would play. Right? And what does that come down to? So I don't have a thing that, like, if they don't do X, I would make a coaching change. But I understand the frustration more right now than I have in the past. So they gotta go win some big games and live up to their talent, which I think, especially last week, they didn't.
So it's interesting you say this because you and I are actually on the same side of this again. Like, we're pretty much in lockstep. I get every criticism that they have. I just think the level of vitriol is wild. And like our morning show, the Morning Boys today, sent out a poll at, I think it was like 7 or 8 a.m. Is Ryan Day coaching for his job? And 77.6 of 1,300 voters voted yes.
And it just like kind of this week for his job.
I believe that is the context, Although I might be applying that. And it kind of blew my mind here because I got to be honest with you. Like, I feel like living in Northeast Ohio, I encounter a lot of Walmart Ohio State fans, and I say that that's the people who like never went to Ohio State, and they're just fans because you live in Ohio and that's what you do in Ohio. Is the vitriol as strong for Ryan Day in Columbus as it seems to be in Cleveland, where I feel like I'm the last reasonable man trying to talk about Ryan Day?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think that it's similar across the fan base. I do think like the last 2 weeks, like a loss and an unimpressive win as a 4-point win as a 25.5-point favorite. Has affected some people in general, right? Because we do surveys like that with our audience a lot too. And the audience we have, it's like you pay to be a tech subscriber and you really, really care about Ohio State. And they are always less vitriolic, less fire the guy than sort of like the casual fans are. So I do agree with your point there. Sometimes if you're a little more casual, you're like, just get rid of the guy. But there is a line for everybody. And so they have enough talent to be awesome. And so if you feel like they aren't reaching that, everybody's got a line. And the way this season has transpired, I think, has pushed more people toward it. Now, the hard thing is, well, they could lose to Penn State, go 10-2. They're absolutely in the playoff at 10-2. Because that would include a win over Indiana if they are 10-2. No doubt about it, they're in. And once they're in, there's not a super team this year. They could be 10-2 and win the national title. And then it's like, well, should you have fired Ryan Day? So that's the part of it that's like, well, it's not realistic. They're not going to fire him on Monday. But at some point, if you feel like this is a disappointing season, it affects your view of the coach, for sure. And so I'll wait until the season's done. But if that season is not very competitive at the national title level, then that has an influence on the future, for sure.
So I'm asking this, this is going to sound like a loaded question. I don't mean it like this. But as somebody who observes Ryan Day at this level, I think the thing that bugs me is the discrediting of Ryan Day. None of the success is any of his doing. So I'm just curious, like, what do you think Ryan Day deserves credit for other than the ridiculous record that looks really good on face value?
Revolutionizing the Ohio State offense. You think about where it was. I mean, it's a quarterback run offense before Ryan Day gets here as an offensive coordinator, and everything that has happened since then with throwing the ball and producing these quarterbacks, and really it's a passing team for the first time in Ohio State history. That's Ryan Day, right? I think it's a team you can be proud of. I don't think Ryan Day would shove an opposing player on the sideline like Kirby Smart did. You know, Georgia has dudes driving 100 miles an hour all over the city of Athens, Georgia. Ohio State doesn't have that. I'm not saying they have perfect players, but it's nothing close to that. So I think that, you know, that does still matter in college football, I think, to a lot of people. I think the culture is good. I think the players like him. I think that does matter. I think there's a ton of stuff that is positive, but it does remind me a little bit. It's not Cooper. People want to compare it to John Cooper. That's not my comparison. But my first year covering Ohio State was 05, so I wasn't here for the 02 national title. And Jim Tressel getting that in year two, you have all the capital in the world. But 06 and 07, losing to SEC teams in the national title game, it felt like Ohio State couldn't get over the top. And you thought, what is Jim Tressel doing to get him over the top? They're awesome. Like, they're really good, but are they great? And I think that's where the fan base is. And so what does Ryan do to get him over the top in the games that matter? Right? Dan Lanning called that line drive kick that hit off an Ohio State player and Oregon recovered in that game and got a free possession. When does Ohio State do that? Right? The Alabama semifinal, Ohio State, Alabama in 14, Ohio State scored a touchdown at the end of the first half on a receiver pass. When's Ohio State had something like that? It doesn't have to be a trick play necessarily, but how is the head coach getting them over the top when it matters? So much else is healthy and good, but how does he get them over the top? I really think that's like the only critique, but whenever they repeatedly fall short in those moments, that critique becomes stronger.
All right, we got 15 seconds here. Who gets a new job first, Ryan Day or James Franklin?
So it's one of those, I actually think like both programs are actually really healthy. I think this one is more important for Ohio State than Penn State because Penn State has not won this game. But I think Penn State can lose this and still make the playoff, win a playoff game, and be one of the best eight teams in the country. And how can that be a bad year for Penn State? I think Penn State would have to celebrate that. So I don't know. Boy, that's a tough call. Because I think they both could be there.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
For a while, especially in a 12-team playoff, right? Where we're redefining success a little. Man.
I've done it to you again. Doug, you're
maybe
really...
maybe Ryan Day because the standards are higher. The expectations are higher and harder to achieve. But I don't think either are on the precipice right now. I don't. And I don't think the loser of this game is necessarily on the edge. I don't.
Doug, you're the best, buddy. Appreciate you. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
Thanks, man.
Doug Lamorese, Kings of the North, on YouTube, Monday through Thursday at noon. Postgame on Saturday nights as well in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Doug Lamorese, Kings of the North, in the previous segment. And it's so, like, Doug and I tend to see the Ohio State thing the same way. The only thing I would add to the Nebraska game conversation is I think everybody underrated how where Nebraska is their absolute best is where Ohio State is their weakest. Like, that is a truly great Nebraska defensive line. Now, I don't love the fact that this the eighth or ninth best team in the Big Ten can control you on the offensive line with a great defensive line. Like that, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think the Nebraska defensive line is as good as some of the defensive lines or most of the defensive lines you're going to see in the playoffs. But I think I think people slept on it. One, the Nebraska game was between Oregon and Penn State. Maybe the two biggest games this year. Not even maybe. Like, the Michigan game looks like, and not necessarily it's going to be easy, but it's not the challenge in terms of the matchup that it was certainly the last 3 years or the last 2 years. But then, like, you get to, I can't give you that when a team has a strength where you have weaknesses and then they exploit your weakness. So I'm in agreement with Doug when it comes to, okay, that was the kind of loss that you can go, is this gonna be the kind of thing that holds you up really late in the season? Now, they've got another opportunity this weekend to kind of push back on that. And a win against Penn State answers every single question. But the other thing that I agree with Doug on is just how it's the heightened level of the Ryan Day conversation that everybody's so certain to fire Ryan Day that Ryan Day is not a good coach. And listen, I understand every knock against Ryan Day, and I share some of them, right? But I don't want to belabor the point too much because I talked a lot about this in the 6 o'clock hour. But it just feels like if you want to say, hey, why isn't Ryan Day to the level that maybe I want or I expect? I think that's fair. And I think it starts with whatever the hell they're doing on the offensive line. Because if you're not going to have an elite quarterback, you better be damn good in the trenches, because I think there's a correlation between what your quarterback can and can't get away with, what your running game can and can't get away with, and how good your offensive line is. But I think it's when people start to wholly discredit what Ryan has accomplished that I just simply, that's where you miss me. That's where you lose me. And listen, I haven't said by the end of the season, I'm not going to be on the fire Ryan Day train. But just because Nebraska played you close, I'm not panicking. And I'll be honest with you. If you lose to Penn State, but win out, other than that, I think you're still going to be in the playoffs. And then, by the way, it will put an immense amount of pressure on winning the damn game and winning multiple playoff games. Totally get that. But that just feels, the whole conversation feels like you jumped the shark because you didn't beat Nebraska by 30 points. When it could be as simple as it was wedged between two games and they're really good at probably the weakest point on your team, which is your O-line. It is one, what I will say, catastrophic performance from your O-line. I think they've been pretty average. Sometimes they've been better than others. But, like, I still don't know what Justin Fry's offensive lines do well. It's frustrating for me because you put $20 million or $30 million into this team. Why didn't you bring in a new O-line coach? But I digress. But there's just this fevered pitch of where this is. I just think it's a little too high right now. Ryan Day isn't going to be fired if he loses on Sunday. Saturday. They play the game on Saturday. That's how college works. But in fairness, if Ryan Day does lose and they win out, he shouldn't be fired at the end of the regular season, even if he didn't get to the Big Ten title game. As long as there's a playoff game, this thing's going to play out until January. I also think it's interesting, and if you guys missed the report, Drew Aller, he's going to play on Saturday. So again, I'll be watching that game with thinking about the Browns. But the one thing that another thing I really agreed with Doug on is I am no longer certain of Ohio State's ceiling. So there are subtle changes going on here with where this program is. I'm not firing Ryan Day yet. I understand some of your concerns. It's to the degree of discrediting everything the guy's done that I kind of pass on. All right, Don, we got about 45 seconds, buddy. What you got for us?
Thanks for taking the call. So I think Ryan Day gets a little bit of a bad rap, and here's why. We seem to forget that he throttled Syracuse. I forget if they had Trevor Lawrence at the time. I believe he did. But didn't he drop like 55 on them, beat them like 30? Pretty big game. One of the first two Michigan losses he had was kind of fluky in the way the defense kind of fell apart in like 3 minutes. So he deserves criticism, but I think he gets a little too much. He's a very good offensive mind. He's just had a couple games that are big games where he's made like one bad play call in the final 40 seconds of a game that's kind of hurt you. And the Georgia game comes to mind because we were throttling Georgia for a while before Harrison went out. And if he just gets a couple extra yards and keeps the kicker from kicking a 90-yard field goal and gives him a realistic 40-yard field goal, we win the game. And if we win that game, we're national champs. So I think he gets a little bit of a bad rap.
Don, I got to run, buddy. Appreciate you. Go Bucks. Don there calling in, 216-474-0092. It's acting like the margins are miles wide when I think the margins are paper thin. And that's the thing that keeps pulling me back and keeps pulling my punches when it comes to Ryan Day in his tenure at Ohio State. Chris Fedor talks the Cavs fast start next on 92.3 The Fan. Hey guys, Nick Wilson here for my friends at FanDuel. The NFL continues on. It's time you get on the action with FanDuel and your boy, Nicky Dubs, the Prince of Parlay on the FanDuel app. You guys know, whether it's this Cleveland game this weekend, whether it's Thursday night football like we saw last night, whatever it is, whatever it comes to with the NFL, I'm all about FanDuel, and you can be as well, because you'll get started with $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. Just visit FanDuel.com/Wilson. This Sunday's game is another great opportunity for you to get in the action. I'd stay away from the Jameis props right now. Just in this game, it's a really good defense they're going to face. Don't hate the Browns as home dogs, though. That's FanDuel.com/Wilson. To talk about the Cavaliers, to talk about the 5-0 start, it's been pretty good, right? Pretty good. Welcome on somebody who's also pretty good of Cleveland.com, Cavs and NBA writer, reporter, extraordinaire, 92.3 The Fan as well. The great Chris Fedor joins us now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Nick, I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Well, I got to say, Jason Pinkston was with us an hour ago, and halfway through the interview, he teed off and smoked one down the fairway while we were talking to him, so the pressure is on to top that.
Wow. Yeah, well, I'm not going to be doing that, unfortunately, especially not in Cleveland when it's like 50 degrees and windy, and I'm on my way to the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse to cover the big showdown between the Cavs and the Magic. But I'll see what I can do if I can one-up that.
If you just punch somebody in the middle of the interview, like just find somebody, because I know you're a violent guy. Everybody knows. You look at you. There's a menace to you. I'm just saying that could top it. I'm just giving you ideas.
Maybe I could get pulled over. That's happened before on a radio hit that I've done. That was pretty awkward. So we'll try and avoid that. But that would that qualify as one-upping that?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's. I think now we're cooking with gas. Now I like where we're at here. Are you surprised at the Cavs 5-0 start?
I'm surprised at the way that it's all come together as quickly as it has. Am I surprised that they're 5-0 based on the schedule that they've played? No, not really. Am I surprised that they're beating teams by an average of close to 20 points a night? That's the thing that surprises me. The level of dominance that they have shown, the level of comfort that they've shown with this offense, with this defense, and some of the changes that they make stylistically, that's a little bit surprising. I think one of the things that they always had on their side coming into this year, Nick, is that they had continuity, they had familiarity. They brought 13 of 14 full-time players back from last year's team, but there were also changes that they were trying to make within the offense, within the defense, and for them to have this level of buy-in so soon, for them to have this level of comfort so soon in the stylistic changes that they've been trying to make, that to me is a little bit surprising.
Chris, when you look at Boston, that is anybody that anyone wants to talk about, the defending champions there, describe the journey. Like, what is it going to take, regular season, postseason, whatever, to convince you that they are on or near the level of Boston?
I don't think there's anything that can happen. Honestly, I don't, during the regular season, because the questions that I have about this team, and I was talking to my podcast host Ethan Sands about this last night, the questions that I have about this team need to be answered in a playoff environment, because we have seen this team be successful in the regular season. 99 wins the last 2 years. Last year, they had a middle-of-the-road offense. And then they got into the playoffs, and their offense just, it couldn't function at a high enough level for what it was required of playoff basketball success. And that's the thing that I need to see from this team. And the belief is that this kind of style that they're playing offensively, less reliant on pick and roll, more creativity, more continuous movement, more flow within the offense, more of a democratic approach to how it's run, the belief is that that's going to provide the Cavs with more answers in a seven-game series. But I got to see that. I got to see that first. I got to see Darius Garland show a level of playoff readiness that he hasn't shown in the past. I got to see Jared Allen and Evan Mobley together in a playoff environment work at the highest level that it would need to for them to be successful. I've got to see less stylistic complications between Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell in a playoff environment. Because the last couple of playoffs that they've been involved in, 2 years ago against New York, they had one of the worst offenses of any team in the playoffs. And then last year in the playoffs against both Orlando and Boston, they had one of the worst offenses of any team in the playoffs. So I've got to see a lot of these same components work in a playoff environment before I can start to think that they're on the same level or close to the same level as a team that I believe is the closest thing that we have to the dynastic Golden State Warriors.
So is it, if you see it in like the first round of the playoffs, that's enough? Or you will reserve judgment until you see it against the Celtics in the playoffs?
I think it depends what happens in the first round. I think the level of opponent that they play in the first round and how they look in that first round playoff series, I think that will be informative. But there's just nobody in the NBA, Nick, that's on the level of Boston. And that's no disrespect to Oklahoma City. That's no disrespect to the Cavs. That's no disrespect to the Phoenix Suns, a chic team that some people are calling to advance out of the Western Conference and get to the NBA Finals. I think could be a really, really talented team this year. It's just Boston's on a different level than everybody else in the NBA. They can do things on the offensive end from a consistency standpoint that nobody has been able to match, and they've got a defense that complements that. So I do think like some of what the Cavs would do potentially in a first-round playoff series against a playoff-caliber opponent is going to be somewhat informative, but it's going to come with the caveat of, yeah, but it's not Boston. And there are teams that are probably going to test the Celtics, especially in a playoff environment. Might get a game from them, might get two games from them, but in order to keep them from getting to the NBA Finals and hoisting another banner, you've got to beat them four times in seven tries. I just don't think there's a team out there in the NBA that's capable of doing that.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com. Lover of chic teams, Cavs and NBA reporter on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. All right, so I need you to predict, when's the first loss coming? Because it ain't tonight.
No, I don't think it's tonight. I don't think it's tomorrow in Milwaukee. They've got a host of issues that they're trying to work through, and I don't know that they're going to be able to work through them with the coach that they have. You know, not next week in New Orleans. Unless the Cavs just, like, don't bring anybody on that one-game road one-off. I think we're probably looking at the end of next week, probably, for this team. I mean, I guess tomorrow is a little bit because it's the second game of a back-to-back. But I just don't believe in Milwaukee at any level. So probably next week. I think they're going to have a realistic chance, Nick, of getting to that 8-0 mark, which that is the franchise record for wins to open up a season.
So I know Tristan Thompson said he thinks LeBron is going to extend his career to play with his younger son, Bryce. Do you think that's realistic?
So I'm going to answer this in the best way that I think I can based on my experience covering LeBron James. When it comes to LeBron, I have learned that you never doubt anything with him. So I am not going to put it past him to continue to play at a high level into his 40s and extend his career until he's 42 years old or 43 years old. Like, do I think it's something that in his own mind he's thinking, I need to accomplish this before I hang up the sneakers? No, I don't think it's at that point. You know, when I first covered LeBron for those 4 years, when the Cavs were going to NBA finals after NBA finals after NBA finals, LeBron openly talked to reporters in the locker room about his desire to play with Bronny and how that was something that he wanted to accomplish throughout the course of his career. At some point, after winning the championship in 2016 for the Cavs, like, when he looked at his career, he's like, yeah, I could win another championship or two or something like, but it's not a necessity. The thing that I need to do, the thing that I want to do, is play alongside Bronny. So I don't think it's to that same level with Bryce, but if he continues to move up the rankings and stuff like that, and he continues to get more notice from other college teams, and it continues to look like a possibility that maybe, possibly, he could be an NBA prospect, I wouldn't put it past LeBron to want that to happen, to have an opportunity to not just share the floor with Bronny, but to do it with Bryce as well. And look, LeBron is still playing at an incredibly high level, Nick. The other night, he's sharing the floor with Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Anthony Davis. And guess who was the leading scorer in that game between the Cavs and the Lakers? It was LeBron. So if he can continue to play at a high enough level where he just thinks it's hard for him at that point to walk away, I don't put it past him to try and stick around long enough to do that.
He didn't give me a chance to guess. I was going to guess LeBron.
I'm sorry. I've got to get better at that.
That's okay.
I answered my own question. That's my bad.
It's okay. It's fine. I didn't want to anyways. Who is the Cavs' Udonis Haslam?
Tristan Thompson.
When's he getting the statue?
Yeah. I don't think he's getting a statue. I've had this conversation, though, with a few different people inside the organization about retire the jersey of Tristan Thompson or don't retire the jersey of Tristan Thompson. I think if you look at the jerseys that are hanging up there, it's not the highest bar to clear, necessarily. And he was integral to the Cavs' only championship in 2016. And if you look at some of the stats, and part of this is he's just been able to compile them, but, you know, on the franchise rankings, rebounding, the things that were synonymous with Tristan Thompson, he's up there. So statue, probably a little bit too much, but I think there's going to be a healthy debate about his number in the rafters.
I'd rather retire a Kardashian, just to be fair. Chris, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Who's one?
Can I say all of them?
I thought you would, yes.
Yeah,
that was a predictable response, yeah, on brand.
I feel like if I said Chloe, that just feels awfully personal towards Tristan, and that dude could beat my ass 3 days a week without like batting an eye. I'd rather not have that.
That's probably a good call by you, yes.
Chris, great stuff, buddy. Enjoy the game tonight. Happy to have you on.
You got it, man. Anytime.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, and the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline when we come back. It's time for the 5 at 5 on 92.3 The Fan.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.